कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ, कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय,
लोकत्रयोपकाराय
तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः,
हरे कृष्ण. So now we come to the second section of the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The first section talked about how by practicing karma yoga one will eventually become free from karmic bondage. And actually the question is there, how does one do action yet remain free from bondage? So Krishna will illuminate that answer in the next two sections, where first he will introduce the concept of multiple doers, which is largely drawn from Sankhya. Sankhya, as we know, is a school of thought, one of the six systems of Indian philosophy, which analyzes matter quite exhaustively.
Panchaitani Mahabaho
Karanani Nibodhame, Karanani Nibodhame Sankhe Kritante Proktani, Sankhe Kritante Proktani Siddhaye Sarva Karmanam, Siddhaye Sarva Karmanam. So, Panchaitani, there are five. Karanani Nibodhame. So, generally in Hindi or Marathi, the word Karan means because. Whereas in Sanskrit, the word Karan can also mean not because, but in terms of impetus, factors, causes. Just like we have the word Hetu. The Hetu, iske karan mein ye kar raha, iske Hetu se main kar raha hun. So, Hetu can mean cause, or Hetu can also mean instrument. So, become a Hetu, become an instrument. Nimitta matram bhava savyasachi. So here, Karanani refers not so much to causes as to factors, five factors of action. They are also causes in a sense, we'll discuss how. But Sankhya Krutante Proktani. So Sankhya, in Sankhya Proktani, it is said that Krutante, in all actions at the end, for the Siddhaye, for the action to end with Siddhaye, for all actions to, for any action or all actions, Sarva Karmana, to end in success, there has to be these five factors. So, let's see what is the connection of these five factors with the analysis of Nishkam Karma Yoga. Is Sankhya atheistic Sankhya or Kapila Sankhya? Generally speaking, whenever the word Sankhya is referred to in Indian philosophy, it refers to the non-theistic Sankhya. Now, the Vaishnavacharya explained that is not the only Sankhya, and that is not a bona fide Sankhya also. But the bona fide Sankhya is the Sankhya of Devahuti Putra Kapiladeva. But as I mentioned, we had an elaborate discussion on this earlier, I mentioned Baldev Vidya Bhushan refutes Sankhya in Govinda Bhashya. It's as a doctrine which is not in harmony with the Vedanta. And there what he is refuting is not Devahuti Putra Kapila Sankhya, he is referring to the, he doesn't refer to any Kapila in a detailed way, because the primary commentary on atheistic Sankhya is the Sankhya Karika by Ishwara Krishna. So he refers to that and he refutes that. So Sankhya basically, it refers to analysis of material elements. So it doesn't necessarily, in the central aspect of Sankhya, neither theism nor atheism is the prominent aspect. See, our understanding, Sohotra Maharaj has written a good book on the six systems of philosophy. But there he explains that actually the six systems were progressive developmental stages which culminated Vedanta. But suppose there are these progressive departments, but each of them, say like you have junior college or primary, secondary, then junior college, senior college, then you have graduation, post-graduation, then you have doctorate. These are like various stages in the same education process. But if each of these themselves become separate universities and they become competing schools of thought, then what was originally correct becomes later on wrong. So knowledge at the primary level is correct. But if that is made as an independent school, independent body of knowledge, so at the primary level 3 minus 5 is not possible is correct. But if that is made the conclusion, then that becomes wrong. So there is a progression in these six systems of philosophy, that first we start looking at the material elements, and Sankhya, we analyze. What are they composed of? So just look at matter, and matter has so many alluring things within it, but we understand ultimately this is just made of elements. So basically, in the history of science or Western intellectual history, there have been two approaches to matter. One is the elemental theory of matter, and the other is the atomic theory of matter. So elemental theory of matter is what Sankhya follows. That means whatever matter we see, we divide it into some fundamental elements. Whereas this was also what was followed by Socrates to some extent. But today in the mainstream modern science, the elements are not considered fundamental elements. Fundamental. So today what is used in science is the atomic theory of matter. And the atomic theory of matter is Mimamsa. Sorry, it is Vaisheshika. So the word used is not atom, it's molecules. And the conception is not exactly the same as in modern science, but that's the broad idea. That means one way is we divide matter into some fundamental particles, fundamental elements, which have some irreducible properties. And the other is we reduce all the variety of matter down to its building blocks, which do not have any distinctive characteristics. Now, according to modern science today, atoms, they do not have any fragrance, they do not have any color, they do not have any taste. So that is a big mystery, how from these places, from those atoms, how the world as we know it, as is experienced so colorfully by the senses, how it emerges, that is a puzzle in science. So of course they say that these properties emerge with combination, but it's difficult to explain because the building blocks don't have these properties. So basically there are two approaches to study of matter. That's basically, is it like, as I said, primary, secondary. Then after that, one starts going beyond matter and one starts perceiving some higher truths. So that sort of analysis is what is there in Mimamsa. So Mimamsa understands that there are some higher beings who are beyond matter and they can be appeased to gain control over matter. But Mimamsa is also materialistic because these higher beings are not considered to be independent. The higher beings are also under the laws of karma. And karma is considered to be a material law. So in Mimamsa, there is no concept of a transcendental Ishvara who can save a person from karma. Karma is considered final. And everybody is under karma. So, but basically what has happened is, one has gone beyond matter to some beings who are supervising matter. But still the conception is not spiritual, it's material. Then after that there is yoga. In yoga, at the fourth stage, what happens? One starts perceiving spiritual reality and one starts following disciplines for pursuing that spiritual reality. And then in yoga, one basically goes beyond the body towards the soul. But and ultimately one is supposed to go towards the super soul. But that is preliminary. In Vedanta, the focus is directly on Brahman. So Vedanta Sutra begins with Athato Brahma Jigyasa. So the Mimamsa Sutra begins with Athato Dharma Jigyasa. Because in Mimamsa Sutra, Dharma is considered to be the highest reality. So of course their understanding of Dharma is different from the Vaishnava understanding of Dharma. Dharma refers to the laws of nature basically. So there is Chandilya's Bhakti Sutras where Athato Bhakti Jigyasa is the beginning verse. So Vedanta Sutra, why I am giving these examples is, in Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta school of thought, Brahman is the central focus. That's how it's a progression. And Nyaya is logic. So logic is foundational to all these schools of thought. I'll just elaborate this, or I'll write this down so that it's clear now. So of course, what I'm giving is a very simple outline of quite a complex system. They are progressive, not competitive. It's not that these are fighting with each other, that as they are originally conceived at least. So first is, what did I say? Nyaya is foundational. So logic is something which is used by everyone. But what happened is, Nyaya itself became an independent school of thought. And in modern science, we have something called as rationality, which is something similar to Nyaya. So, if now by logic itself, we can understand the truth of some propositions and the falsity of certain propositions. But logic itself cannot give us the ultimate truth, because logic is conceived by the finite human mind, and the absolute truth is infinite. It's analysis of matter into elements, Sankhya. Then there is Vaisheshika. It is analysis of matter into molecules or atoms. Then there is Mimamsa. Yoga is perceiving spiritual reality through physical and mental discipline. And Vedanta is focus on Brahman, the highest spiritual reality. Yes. Karma, generally Mimamsa refers to Karma Mimamsa. Vedanta often refers to Uttar Mimamsa. So Mimamsa is also called as Purva Mimamsa, the first part of Mimamsa. So Purva is generally, like Gopal Champu has two parts, Purva Champu and Uttar Champu. So Purva is the first, Uttar is the second. So like that, Purva Mimamsa and Uttar Mimamsa. Uttar Mimamsa is Vedanta. Yeah, Karma Mimamsa and Purva Mimamsa are same. Yes, now normally many these two schools of thought are often clubbed together. So this is the progression, correct? So I think the way they are clubbed together is this Nyaya Vaisheshika. Nyaya Vaisheshika, Sankhya Yoga and Mimamsa Vedanta. So, I won't go into the details of why they are clubbed together in that way. So, let me answer your question about, are these separate from the four Vedas? So generally, Indian philosophies were classified into broad categories. They are called as orthodox and heterodox. This is of course modern usage, but it is like we could say Astik and Nastik. So orthodox is accepted Vedic authority. So all the six systems, they accept the Vedic authority. Heterodox is those which reject Vedic authority. So these are primarily Buddhism, Jainism and Charvakism. Jainism. Charvakism. So, now among the six systems of philosophy, all of them, they basically claim to be derived from the authority of the Vedas. But often their understanding is inadequate or even incorrect. So, now what does the Vedanta Sutra do? Vedanta Sutra bases itself on the Vedas, on the Upanishads especially, the Shrutis. And then it, by quoting from the Shrutis, it establishes how the other philosophies, other five philosophies, are not the conclusion of the Vedas, whereas Vedanta is the conclusion of the Vedas. So, to understand it another way is, see, we have to understand the difference between literature and philosophy. Literature and philosophy. What is the difference? Literature is a literary work. Now, what is the philosophy taught by literature? See, for example, now, if you want to understand what is the philosophy of the Ramayana, Ramayana is a literature. So, what do we mean by philosophy? Philosophy is basically a logical body of knowledge that answers some fundamental questions of life. Literature is just a work of a literary work. So, this is an important distinction to understand, so that we will understand what is happening in generally when we try to defend our tradition. Or even you could say scripture and philosophy also, but I'll keep the word literature over here. So literature is a book of literary merit. Philosophy is a logical body of knowledge that answers fundamental questions. So, now, if I want to know what is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, as an example, if you take it. Now, actually, there are some philosophical sections within the Bhagavatam. For example, you could say the most philosophical section in Bhagavatam is the Uddhava Gita, 11th canto. And apart from that, there is some philosophy in Sankhya's teaching, in the teachings of Kapila. Maybe there is some philosophy elsewhere. But actually, the Bhagavatam itself, in and of itself, at its center, it's not a philosophical book. It's a conversation. It's a conversation between two people, which also reports further conversations and further incidents. And within that, philosophy is viewed together. So now, if I want to know, for example, why do bad things happen to good people? For example, this is a fundamental question of philosophy. Now, there is no one specific section in the Bhagavatam which answers this question explicitly. If I want to know what is the answer of the Bhagavatam to this, then I'll have to look over various places. For example, the first canto, when the bull is being beaten. So at that time, Parikshit comes and asks him, what is the cause of your suffering? So, yes. So, then from there, we will have to derive what is the answer, and based on that, we try to see what is the philosophy. Then we get in the 10th canto, we have Yudhishthira Maharaj asking to Lord Krishna, you know, why do your devotees suffer? And then there is the answer to that. So, if I want to know what is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam or the problem of evil, then I will have to derive it from various passages that deal with this. Or if I want to talk about, say, what is the Bhagavatam's conception of God? So now, there is no specific, I'll give you examples. So for example now, in Your Secret Journey, which is your best friend. Now there is a whole series of chapters which talk about what is God. Now these are derived from various sections from Prabhupada's books. So here we get to one place where we get understanding of what is God. So now this is something like a work of systematic theology. It's a preliminary work. because it is based primarily on only one source. One source is Prabhupada's books. It's not taking so much from the previous acharyas. But still, that some indicates some pointer of systematic theology or systematic philosophy. So, now when you're talking about going backwards, so the Vedas are books of literature. And then there are these different schools of thought, different philosophies. Now these different philosophies, they will try to prove how they are derived from, they are based on the Vedic literature. So now Vedanta Sutra will establish how they are actually not based on the Vedic literature. They may draw from some quotes from the Vedic literature, but they are not the conclusion of the Vedic literature. So all the systems accept the Vedas as authority, but their conclusions are not the authoritative Vedic conclusions. Their conclusions go off track from the Vedic conclusion. Is it clear? Much question?
So,
yeah. Where does impersonalism from Ashtavakra come? It comes in Vedanta. See, the Vedanta Sutra is accepted as authority by both personalists and impersonalists. But what does the Vedanta Sutra mean? So it's like, you have multiple generations of exposition. There are the original Vedas. They have certain meaning. What is that meaning? That is debated by the six systems of philosophy. And how the conclusion of the Vedas is not matter, it is not mantra, it is not any of these, it is Brahman. That is established by Vedanta Sutra. Now what is that Brahman? Is it personal or is it impersonal? That is debated by the Vaishnavas and the Mayavadis and the impersonalists. So now in the debate between the Vaishnavas and the impersonalists, the six systems of philosophy are put aside. The six systems of philosophy are basically talking about what is the meaning of the Vedas. Now primarily the Vaishnavas and the impersonalists, they both accept that the meaning of the Vedas is Brahman. They both accept the authority of Vedanta Sutra. Now, six systems of philosophy, the other five systems will not accept Vedanta Sutra as authority. They will not accept. They will accept only the Shrutis as authority. Shrutis means the Upanishads. The 10 primary Upanishads and then there are 98 secondary Upanishads. So, when we come to Vedanta, then the personalists and the impersonalists both accept Vedanta Sutra as the authority. But then they debate over what is the meaning of Vedanta Sutra. So, the Advaitavad also comes within the Vedanta itself. Yes. They are? Yeah. So, if these are in progression, then why are they now independent bodies of thought, and why are the teachers or the teachers of this tradition also in conflict? So the understanding is, Vyasadeva instructed all these different disciples. And their understanding was not complete. And based on their understanding, they wrote. And that's how their understanding is. Now, he gave, basically these are branches of Vedic knowledge. And he entrusted a specific branch to a specific teacher. So now when that branch is made into the whole, then it leads to a problem. So, Baldev Vidyabhushan explains in the Govinda Bhashya, that these are disciples of Vyasadeva, are themselves great souls. But even great souls can sometimes, either by the arrangement of the Lord or by their own misuse of free will, sometimes come under the influence of the illusory energy. And when they come under the influence of energy, they speak things which are not necessarily the Vedic conclusion. So we consider them, we accept that they are disciples of Vyasadeva, but that in and of itself doesn't make them authoritative. We remember earlier we discussed that the Siddhanta is so important that even if Krishna speaks something which is not the Siddhanta, then we don't accept Krishna's teachings also. The example is Govardhan Leela. Krishna speaking Karma Mamsa in Govardhan Leela. So similarly, the five of these six acharyas, they are the disciples of Vyasadeva. They have learned knowledge from him only, but their conclusions differ from Vyasadeva's conclusions. So we accept them as Vyasadeva's disciples, but we don't accept them as authorities in expounding Vedic knowledge.
Vyasadeva.
Yeah, so all the five disciples were instructed by Vyasadeva, but Vyasadeva himself wrote the Vedanta Sutra when he saw that others had not understood properly. Ashtavakra is not the authority of Vyasadeva. Ashtavakra is not one of the six systems of philosophy. It's got nothing to do with the six systems of philosophy. He is an Acharya and generally is considered to be impersonalist, but whatever he is not considered like a founding Acharya of any of these schools of thought. No, Manusamhita is not an Anyaya, it is a Smriti. It's part of Smriti. See, the Vedas themselves, in the Shruti, are considered to be direct revelations. The Smriti are elaborations on those revelations. So, Manusmriti doesn't claim directly to be of divine origin. It is given by Manu. So, like there is this Parashara Smriti also. There are various Smritis like that. So, it's a part of Smriti literature. For
philosophical examples, some statements by which we can understand what is the systems. Nyaya.
What are these philosophies? Examples. Generally, they don't come in our literature, so they're not explicitly mentioned. So Sankhya is mentioned in the third canto, but otherwise, these philosophies are quite intricate. I don't think we can go into it. There is Sotra Maharaj's book. Actually, each of them has its own epistemology also. How knowledge is acquired. And it is over the centuries, they have become very complex schools of thought. But essentially, as I said, I gave the outline, they conclude that matter is all that exists, ultimately. That is Sankhya. So they said that in Sankhya, there is a concept of Purusha also. But Purusha is considered to be non-eternal, at least in atheistic Sankhya, like that. So now, here Krishna will use the word Sankhya in terms of analysis of material elements. And he'll talk about the various causes, that various factors that play a causative role when action is performed. Yes.
Different kinds of what we hear in Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
So, is it Artha Kukut Nyaya? In a sense, yes. But generally, Artha Kukut Nyaya is the word that is used when some part is deliberately neglected because it is unfavorable. So, the front of the hen is deliberately neglected because you have to feed it. But this is not exactly like that. It's a different interpretation. So ultimately, it is Artha Kukut in the sense that the full Vedic picture is not considered. Yeah.
My question is like different kinds of like this Artha Kukut Nyaya. There is one Bakhanda Nyaya also. So is it part of this first philosophy, which we refer in Prabhupada books? Kaumuttik Nyaya.
Okay. Are all these part of Nyaya? Okay. See now. The word Nyaya is used as a general word to refer to any logical argument. So that usage is okay. It's a logical argument, so it's called Nyaya. On the other hand, Nyaya is also a whole developed body of knowledge which has its own philosophy. So then what we call as Artha Kukut Nyaya or Kaumuttik Nyaya, are they a part of the Nyaya school of philosophy? Well, they are not the monopoly of the Nyaya school of philosophy. They are basically logical arguments. See, how do I explain this? Okay. See, logic as a tool for discussion and debate will be used by all schools of philosophy. And that way, Ardha Kukut Nyaya and Kaumutik Nyaya, all of these will also be used by all schools of philosophy. So, when Nyaya simply refers to logical arguments or the skill of logical argumentation, then that is something which is used by all schools of thought. But Nyaya itself, when logic itself is considered to be the highest pramana, then one arrives at a set of inferences about what is the nature of reality. And because that is considered to be logic in itself is not the final conclusion. Logic cannot arrive, help us to arrive at the final conclusion. That's why that's considered to be incorrect. Adhishthanam tatha karta karanam cha prithak vidha prithak vidham vidhascha prithak cheshta daivam chaivatra panchamam. So let's look at these five factors of action now. So, adhishthanam tatha karta. Yeah. So, five factors of action. Adhishthanam is the arena or place of action. So, I use the example here to understand a cricket match. So how action happens? So there has to be appropriate arena for the action. So there's the cricket pitch and the cricket ground. Adhishthanam. Then karta. There has to be the doer. So there's a batsman or a baller or a fielder or whatever. That's the adhishthanam tatha karta. Then karanam is the senses that are used. So if it's a batsman, the batsman has to use his eyes to see, then he has to have footwork, and then he has to swing his hand properly so that he can hit a sixer. So adhishthanam tatha karta. Karanam. Karanam are the specific senses that are used for performing that action. Karanam cha prithak vidha. So there are different senses for vidham, for different actions. Now vividhas cha prithak cheshta. Cheshta refers to endeavor. So you know, even when a person has to hit a sixer, it's not that you just arbitrarily swing the bat and it will go for a sixer. The person practices. So practice is an endeavor. So if a bowler wants to bowl a yorker by which he clean bowls the batsman, so he has to practice again and again and again. So, the endeavor refers to the repeated exertion of the senses to achieve a desired result. And then after that, there is daiva. Daiva is divine sanction. So, even when a batsman plays, you know, actually, cricket batsmen, they say that actually, no two shots that they hit are ever identical. Although the same batsman may hit the same straight drive which goes to a boundary or which goes for a sixer, no two straight drives are identical. Why? Because there are so many factors involved. The bowler may bowl at a different speed, the pitch may be different, the batsman's posture may be different, the batsman follow-through action may be different, the wind velocity may be different. So many factors are involved that in this world, no two actions are identical. Now, we know it ourselves from a more practical example. You know, we may give the same device one session 100 times. But no two device sessions on the same topic are identical. Because there are so many factors involved over there. So, who is the audience we are speaking to? How enthusiastic they are? How well prepared we are? How much we remember at that time? So many factors come into figure. So, the same factor in adhishthanam tatha karta karanam, if we apply to a device session. Adhishthanam, where am I giving that session? If I am giving it to small children, if I am giving it to an average engineering college students, if I am giving it to IIT college students. So that will determine how it will be spoken. Karta is who is speaking. That will also make a difference. That is also important. Karanam. So we use particular senses for speaking. I may use my hands to gesture. I may use my tongue for speaking. So why are the karanam considered over here important? Because those senses which are required for that action, if they are not functioning, then even if the karta is there, the work will not happen. Now, adhishthanam in some cases can be also used to refer to the body. But basically, it's the material situation. So, it can be the body or it can be the external situation. So, for analytical purposes, I'm talking about the external arena over here, which is used for, which is where the action happens. Then cheshta, I said, how well I have I practiced, how well I have memorized, how well I have revised. And then even after that, there is always that, in all forms of teaching or preaching, there is that element of inspiration, where we ask questions, we get answers at that particular point, or we don't get answers, we become tongue-tied, as it happened with Keshav Kashmiri, when he couldn't reply to Chaitanya Nimai Pandit. So, these are the five factors of action, which determine whether we will get the results or not. So, earlier we have discussed about the three factors of action. Jiva, Ishwara and Prakriti. So now, Jiva is Karta over here. Ishwara is Deva. And the Prakriti is divided into three over here. Adhishthanam, Karanam and actually Cheshta is not exactly Prakriti. Cheshta is the endeavor of the Jiva in Prakriti. I'll explain that. So now Daiva is something, let's look at Daiva first. Daiva is something which everybody knows that there is a factor which is involved over there. Now cricketers are among the world's most superstitious players, people. Now almost all cricketer has some idea of what will succeed. There's a famous Australian cricketer, he would always keep a red kerchief which would be 3/4 inside the pocket and 1/4 outside the pocket. And you know, every time he would be running, as soon as he throws the ball, he will look whether the kerchief is in the right position or not. His idea was that if the kerchief is slightly positioned wrong, he will not be able to perform well. Then there was another cricketer who had the idea that if he goes out to bat, all the toilets in the washroom, they should all be shut down. And if any of them is open, then he will go halfway down, he will go again and check whether it is closed or not. And then he will go up. And his idea was that if anybody, and he would tell all the other team players also, even if you go to the washroom, don't keep the toilet open. Shut it down. So he had some idea that this will affect my performance. Then there are other people. There are some other people who, you know, there's a famous tennis player who would wear only one earring. And his idea was that one earring is a good luck charm. So the point which we may say that these particular beliefs are absurd. But what these beliefs suggest or point to is important. That is, all these players, see, especially if sports is a field where there is almost like a superhuman endeavor, which is required for success. So they all recognize this point that there is some higher factor that is involved when they perform and succeed. No doubt they know that they have to work hard, but still it's not their hard work alone which will lead to success. Now, there was one Indian cricketer who made, just a few months ago, he made a double century in one-day cricket. So, one-day double century is very rare. Only one other cricketer had done it before that, and he was second person. So, when he was nearing the double century, at that time, he hit a shot, and that was a straight catch to the opposing team captain. And that opposing team captain dropped the catch. And then he said later on in the interview, he says, when he dropped the catch, I knew that God was with me. Then they asked him, does that mean that God caused that player to drop the catch? So he had no answer to that. So, but the point is, what I'm illustrating through all these examples is that in sports, especially where success is requires some excellent performance, people recognize that it is my endeavors. There are something higher which is also involved in success. So they may not necessarily know what it is. They may not attribute it to God. Some cricketers are also believers. They may attribute it to God also. Others may not. But the point is, they have this conception that there is something higher, some higher factors which are beyond me, which will enable me to succeed. So, or for example, in cricket, they have the concept of a batsman is out of form now, or is in form. Now, every batsman would like to always be in form. Now, what determines whether he's in form or not in form? Isn't it? He's the same hand, the same bat, the same cricket pitch, the same bowler. Yesterday hit him for a sixer, today he got clean bowled. Same ball also. Same length delivery also it may be. So what makes the difference? They just use the word, is in form, out of form. But what determines whether he's in form or out of form?
Sorry? Body is the same. So it's similar to Arjuna saying, Tadvai Dhanus. Arjuna is saying, this is the same bow, same chariot, I'm the same Arjuna, this is the same arrows, but I'm just not able to win. So Arjuna was out of form on that day. if we had to use today's language. But Arjuna did not use that kind of language. Arjuna understood that actually Krishna has withdrawn his power. So, the Daivam Chaivatra Pancham indicates that even in worldly affairs, people recognize that there is some factor which is beyond, which is not really directly in human control. They may not attribute it to some directly transcendental agency or divine control, but they understand there are some higher factors involved, which determine the result. So, coincidences which happen are God's ways of staying anonymous. Coincidence when two things work out right and then the result comes out. Now how does two things work out right? No one knows, but this is worked out right. So actually that is, God is working, but God is staying anonymous over there. Now, as I mentioned earlier, that Jeevishwara Prakriti, if you have to correlate it, we know that Jiva, normally is described Jiva desires, Ishwara sanctions and Prakriti executes. So Jiva is the Karta, Ishwara is the Daiva. Then in Prakriti there is Adhishthanam and Karanam. And then Cheshta is actually the combination of Jiva and Prakriti. That means somebody is a very good singer. So even if somebody has some inborn talent for singing, still if the person has to become a top-notch singer, he has to practice. So that practice is Cheshta. And what is that practice? There is the Atma who has the desire, and maybe if that person is singing, then exercising the voice chords. That is the chesh, that is the interaction with Prakriti. So Cheshta involves the Atma and the Prakriti being interacting in a regulated, disciplined way to get out, to bring out a particular result. Okay. Now, any questions about this? Okay. Where do the three modes come into the picture? Here they will be included in Prakriti itself. See, this analysis is primarily about not the factors which not the motives for the action. They are the elements of action. Three modes to apparently talk about the motives of action. You know, whether I want to generally in goodness, one wants to deal with ideas, control ideas. In passion, one wants to control things. In ignorance, one cannot control anything, neither ideas nor things. It's like that. But basically, it's a motive with which one is doing things. So that is a different analysis. Here we are not talking about motives. Here we are talking about components. Components in terms of elements or factors. Yeah, so the modes will primarily come under Cheshta, no doubt. They'll come under Cheshta. Yeah, so generally we could say that all senses are involved in every action. But still there are some prominent senses which are involved in a particular action. So they are the highlight. But other senses are also involved over there. Sorry? Super soul is mentioned here. Daiva is super soul only. What is that verse? Karmana daiva netrena jantor deha vipatye. So and the daiva is divine supervision. That is super soul ultimately. Same. Okay. Let's move forward to the next verse now. Shariravan mano bhiryat. Karma prarabhate naraha. Karma prarabhate naraha. Nyayam va viparitam va, nyayam va viparitam va. Panchaite tasya hetavaha, panchaite tasya hetavaha. So, now Krishna is telling that these actions can be performed with body, mind and speech. Karma prarabhate naraha. Nara, the human being begins the karma. And nyayam va viparitam va. So, nyaya means justice or right. Viparitam means opposite. So, one gets the right result or doesn't get the right result.
But that is all determined by panchaite tasya hetavah. So these five factors, they will determine whether one gets the result or one doesn't get the result. Now, why is Krishna talking about these five factors? That he will describe the next two verses. He will say that one, a person who does not know these five factors but thinks himself alone to be the doer, such a person is ignorance, and that doership mentality is the cause of bondage. So if one acknowledges all the five factors, then one will not have that exclusive doership mentality, and that will not cause bondage. So, tatraivam sati kartaram, tatraivam sati kartaram, atmanam kevalam tuya, atmanam kevalam tuya, pashyatya krutabuddhitvan, krutabuddhitvan, nasa pashyati durmatihi, nasa pashyati durmatihi. So, atmanam kevalam tuya. Atmanam kevalam means I alone am the doer. So, sati tatraivam sati kartaram. One who thinks that I am the only karta. Pashyatya akruta buddhitvan. So, such a person is pashyat. What way is he saying? Akruta buddhitvan. His buddhi is not very well developed. And because his buddhi is not very developed, nasa pashyati durmatihi. He actually doesn't see. He is durmatihi. So, we are all doers, no doubt. But the illusion is to think that we are the only doers. So, if I sing very nicely, if I speak very nicely, to think that the credit goes to me alone, because I did it all, that is illusion. So Krishna says, such a person is durmatihi. Now in the next verse he will describe, on the other hand, one who understands his subordinate role in the overall execution of action, such a person, even if he does karmically implicating action, like killing, still the person will not become bound. Yasyanaham kruto bhavo buddhiryasyana lipyate, buddhiryasyana lipyate hatvapi saima lokan nahanti nani badyate, hanti nani badyate yasyanaham kruto bhavo. So one is not having ahankar, one is not thinking I am the doer. Buddhiryasyana lipyate. So one whose intelligence doesn't get entangled in the idea that I am doing the work, I am producing the result. Hatvapi sa imalokan. Such a person, even if a person kills, he says he actually is not killing and he is not getting bound by it. Nahanti nanibadhyate. So that means karmic bondage comes not just because of action, but because of the mentality underlying the action. So if the mentality is not fruitive, it is not ignorant, then one will not become bound. So now, as we said, is this 18.17 a license for violence? Now you can kill. If you don't think you are the doer, if you think you are not the doer, you will not be bound. No. The Bhagavad Gita message is not, as we discussed earlier, it is neither silence nor violence. It is transcendence. And specifically in this situation, Arjuna is told that you can achieve transcendence through violence. But the essential message of the Gita is transcendence. And that's the whole idea of yasya naham kruto bhavo. That one thinks that I understand that I am not the doer, and buddhir yasya na lipyate, one whose intelligence is not entangled. So here, this word 18.17, it is the only reference to war in the last 7 chapters of the Gita, last 6 chapters of the Gita. Actually, the earlier reference was 11.32 to 34. And this reference is also indirect. It's not a call for violence. Now, in principle, this verse is similar to the verse in the 5th chapter, which comes just after that. 5.13. What is 5.14? 5.13, Navadware Pure Dehe. Na kartrutvam na karmani, lokasya srujati prabho, na karma phala sanyogam, swabhavastu pravartate. So, na kartrutvam, na karmani. See, person is not doing, nor does such a person cause anyone to do. So, the idea is, actually one in knowledge neither does nor makes anyone do anything. So, similar thing is there. Krutvapi na nibadhyate. Hatvapi saimal lokan nahanti na nibadhyate. So, it is, what is this verse? 5.14. Now, after describing this, Krishna will now move forward to another section in the Gita. Let's discuss, before we go there, see, you had a question? Judea Prabhu? Yes. Is this similar to Prakriti Kriyamanani? It's similar in the opposite sense. There it is saying the person who thinks himself to be the doer is in ignorance. So that verse would be similar to 18.16 actually. Tatrayam sati kartaram atmanam kevalam tuya. So that there is also nasapashyati durmatihi. So there is mudha. So that is similar. This verse is 18.16 is sort of similar to 3.27 and 18.17 is similar to 13.31 prakrityaiva cha karmani kriyamanani sarvasha ya pashiddha atmanam akartaram sapashyati 30 adhik. Yeah, 30. Prakritteva cha karmani kriyamanani sarvasha. So one who says everything is done by prakriti only. Ya pashitatmanam akartaram sa pashuti. One who says that therefore the atma is akartaram. Which person is the seer? So, that way. Is it clear? Yes, Amanah.
The factors which give us result, karma and kala is also involved, because if one may have endeavor, the person may be there, the field of activity may be there, but if his karma is not there, so in here the karma is incorporated through daiva. Is that correct?
Here
kala and karma, they are these two.
Yeah, there are generally, I mentioned Uddhava Gita, Krishna tells Uddhava that different munis have analyzed material nature in different ways, and I am pleased by their, sort of Krishna uses the word something like creative endeavors, the way they analyze, because they all satisfy me. So there are different ways of analyzing action. So we can have, there is karma, daiva and kala. So there kala is considered to be a distinct factor, but ultimately kala is also manifesting the Supreme Lord, isn't it? Kala usmi logakshe. So here, in this analysis, kala would be included in daiva. Karma is included in all of it. Actually, this is all in a sense. Okay, so here it is. Here it will cheshta. Adhishtanata karta karanam vidhashit. Here it will cheshta.
Previous karma affects one through cheshta.
Correct. Now, so we also see that sometimes when we want to study also, we are able to study well. Sometimes we are not able to study well. So what determines that? That is actually our past karma only. So now, let's look at the next section. Starts.
Yeah. So one thing is take to like become totally I am the doer. Another thing is not taking any responsibility. If through this that okay, I've been forced by people say that there was some serial killer. God is telling me to kill. How we can refute that,
Okay, if some serial killer claims that God is inspiring me to kill that. Generally, God's inspiration is in accordance with Guru Sadhu Shastra. So, otherwise, if it is a violation of Guru Sadhu Shastra, that cannot be considered God's inspiration. There's the story of Prabhupada. Some devotee came to Prabhupada and told that, Prabhupada, you came in my dream and you told me to take Marijuana. So, Prabhupada said, it is not me, it is Maya in my garb. So, the whole idea is that whatever the Guru, Sadhu, Shastra or Krishna or Guru, they can appear by paranormal ways to us. But their paranormal instructions, they confirm or harmonize with the normal instructions. They don't know, they are not against those normal instructions. Yes.
Even we, somebody does something on instruction, but a bad action will produce a bad sanskara also. Bad action will also produce a habit in a person. Like suppose a killing is there. Now, okay, for that action he will not get the result. Like suppose in case of a military officer is there. He is doing the work of killing on the order of government. So when he killed, that time he is not getting any reaction for it. But at the same time he got a tendency that any person raises voice he can kill. And that's why we see many army people, they just when they go among civilian public, they even kill them also there. So now when a person does on an order also, but he is getting that habit that further he can do on his own accord. So how we can see that completely free from the reaction?
I hope it... Correct, understood your question. Good question. So if I am doing some activity which is normally not recommended, like say violence, then that will also create a samskara. And will that samskara not affect me? Yes, it's definitely possible. That's why the consciousness is important. So, for example, I was talking to Uttakarma Prabhu. Now he studies so many scientific books to try to refute evolution. So he was saying that, you know, that is the very important service, but that is not a service that is there for everyone. He says, when I am doing scientific preaching, I am studying books or giving talks in conferences, you know, it's not that I think that I am a scientist and these are all scientists, my friends, and I don't associate with them that way. He says, all that I am associated with primarily is the desire of Srila Prabhupada and his instruction for scientific outreach. So that means the inner connection is quite important. So especially when one is doing activities which are not generally done as a part of dharma, then one can get carried away. And that's why one's inner connection is also important. So, for example, you know, for the male ego, there is nothing more flattering than to hear a female praising. But the guru sits on the Vyasasana and hears Vyaspuja offerings from his female disciples. You know, so how is he able to do that? Because he is well connected with the spiritual, with Krishna and his spiritual master. If that connection were not there, then he would get infatuated by that. So that means, you know, we also have to take up services according to our adhikar. Now for Kshatriyas, violence is not a one-time event. But they also have the training of when to be violent and when not to be violent. Now they can go out of control, it's possible. And they will get karmic consequences for that. So here when talking about Hatvapi Saima Loka Nabadhyati Nibadhyate, it's talking Ahanti Nibadhyate, that is talking about at that particular time, by that particular action, which is done without Anankrito Bhavo, there will be no bondage. But the person, if that person is also doing dharma regularly, is also hearing from saints, is doing dharmic rituals, then they also create a samskara properly, by which one understands where the violence is to be done. See, this argument if we use, we could say that the whole grahastha ashram is useless. Because if a man and a woman unite, by that the desire will increase more and more, and the desire will never go away. So then how is grahastha ashram actually a way for spiritual advancement? So just the male-female union is not the way to spiritual advancement. But in grahastha ashram, male-female union is only one part of it. Along with there is a lot of performance of dharma. And the performance of dharma is what gradually leads to purification. And then, when there is a male-female union also, there is the gradual realization that there is nothing really great about all this. Otherwise, there are so many people who, without dharma, they have male-female union. And all that happens is that they feel, okay, I'm not satisfied with this woman, or I'm not satisfied with this man, then let me find some other partner. So, indulgence in and of itself does not lead to any realization or renunciation. It's indulgence coupled with dharma. So that principle applies to activities like violence also. So just the act of violence is not going to lead to any purification in of itself. That violence is accompanied by dharma, and the dharma creates the real samskaras, that I am doing this for Krishna's sake. I am doing this for the sake of dharma. Then that will lead to disentanglement and elevation. Clear? Yes.
Generally for law of karma, we say every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And here also, motivation is also playing a...
It's not necessarily that it's equal and opposite reaction. There is a reaction. Because sometimes we just extrapolate this, but it's not necessary. the reaction also depends on our motivations. So there is a reaction. For example, you are killing an animal and killing a cow. They are killing in one sense. But all killings don't have the same reactions. Killing of a cow will have far more severe reaction than killing a human being. So the law of karma is, for every action there is a reaction. But what is the reaction? It is not necessarily equal for all the similar actions. So killing a Brahman and killing a Shudra is different. Killing a Shudra, killing a Mlecha and killing a Vaishnava is different. Killing a male and a female, there are different reactions. Females are normally not to be killed.
Okay? So I want to ask, how much role does the motivation play and how much is the activity counted in terms of
life? Okay. How much does the motivation play and how much does the action count? Here, of course, the Bhagavata is telling that if one's motivation is pure, then the action will have no effect. That is the point here. One may kill also, but one will not become bound. So to develop that level of motivation is not easy. So that purity of motivation or that clarity of motivation. Clarity with respect to jnana, purity with respect to bhakti. Clarity means at least I understand that I am not the doer. That is jnana chakshu. Bhakti chakshu is that purity, that I am doing this simply for Krishna's sake. Krishna has not introduced himself over here in this analysis right now. This is purely the jnana level analysis, sankhya level analysis. So there is no bhakti right now involved in this analysis. So one has to have either the clarity or the purity. And with that, to the extent that the clarity of purity is there, to that extent, there will be no reaction to the karma. But in general, the action and motivation are related. Certain actions, if they are done repeatedly, then they will shape. You know, if I keep associating with worldly minded people, maybe I am doing it for getting donations for Krishna. But if I keep associating with worldly minded people, gradually their association will rub off on me and my motivation will also change. So, actions and motivations are usually related. And by philosophical education, by devotional purification, one can have the right clarity and purity. But that comes not just by the action, but that comes by the other factors that we do. Okay? Yeah.
Bhagavatam, we hear that this kutam, or you know, the desire to do it again and the subsequent reactions of sins, that cycle, that can be cleaned only by practicing bhakti yoga. All other processes cannot, like that roots example is given, that you burn only the above part, but the roots remain. So here, this is not bhakti. This 17th verse is not talking about bhakti. So we cannot expect that to happen here, isn't it?
Okay.
Samskara.
So now the Bhagavatam says that only when there is bhakti, then there is complete cleansing of all past reactions. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dhunvanti katsnena niharamiva bhaskara. Just as the fog is removed by the rising of the sun, similarly bhakti removes everything. All karmic complications. So, there also in that sixth canto, there is a progressive analysis. And there also, first Shukdev Goswami says that you can become free from sinful reactions by vimarshanam. Vimarshanam is intellectual, jnana, contemplation. And then Shukdev Goswami notices that Parikshit Maharaj is not satisfied with this answer. And so he rises to another answer. And then he talks about bhakti. So that means vimarshan is also a valid way, but it's not a complete way. It's valid in what sense? See, when we are talking about karmic bondage, we are talking about primarily the reactions that come. So, if one is doing with jnana, the reactions will not come. If one is doing with jnana, one will not oneself become entangled in terms of desires also. But still, the past desires will not go away just by that. So, here what Krishna is talking about, the present action. The present action will not lead to entanglement. But Krishna is not saying that the present action will free you from past karmic reactions. There's a difference between the two. That will come only by bhakti. Okay. Yeah. So now, we are going to start another very technical section. So I suggest instead of 5 o'clock, we'll have a break now. Is it okay? Or it's too early? Too early? Okay. If I explain two verses, you will feel that the break is needed now. Sure. How many of you want to break now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. How many want to break after half an hour? Oh, really? Okay, I'll help you to go to sleep. I'll take one verse, then we'll stop. Is that okay? So, anyway, we want to stop at 5 o'clock. So, this verse itself will take some time. So, Jnanam Gyeyam Parijnata Trividha Karma Chodana Karanam Karma Karteti Trividha Karma Sangraha. So, Jnanam, Krishna is talking about Karma Chodana. Karma Chodana is the motive for action. There are three motives for action. Jnana, that is the knowledge. Jnayam, that is the object of knowledge. And then it's Parijnata, that is the knower. And then Karanam Karma Karteti Trividha Karma Sangraha. So the karma sangraha is like accumulation. Karma, the performance of action involves these three components: senses, doer, and the action itself. So now what is Krishna doing over here? He's analyzing in terms of karmendriya and jnanendriya. Action, he's analyzing in terms of karmendriya. So karma chodana is to some extent the action of the jnanendriyas. It's the role of the jnanendriyas. And karma sangraha is the action, is the role of the karmendriyas. So now, okay, let's look at the next verse. I think I don't have the slide here. I'll write it down once again. Let's look at the next verse, then I'll come back to it. Jnanam karma cha karta cha tridhaiva guna bhedataha rochyate guna sankhyane yathava shrunutanyapi. So now Krishna is saying that I will describe these three in terms of three modes: jnana, karma, and karta. And prochyate guna sankhyane, as per sankhya, in terms of gunas, I will describe this. So now in this verse, Krishna, what has he done? In the previous verse, he talked about six elements. Now he has reduced those six elements to three. And those three he will analyze now. So let us see how those six are reduced to three. Six he talked about in the previous verse. I'll explain that. So, what all is 18.8 talking about? Jnanam, Jnaya, Parijnata. Jnana is literally speaking knowledge. Jnaya is that which is to be known. So, Jnana, it's like the Jnaya is that which is to be known, object of knowledge. And Parijnata is the knower. Now Karanam Karma Karteti. These are very clear. So now if you look at these six elements, one thing you can very clearly understand is Parijnata and Karta are the same. Okay. So now by this what we understand is six have become five now. Parijnata and Karta are the same. Now, Krishna is analyzing these elements in terms of material elements. Sorry, in terms of the three modes. We're going to analyze this in terms of three modes. The three modes actually shape either the consciousness of a person or Raji, they shape the... You remember what are the modes? Modes are subtle forces that shape the interaction between consciousness and matter. Isn't it? They shape the interaction between consciousness and matter. So now, Karanam and Gyanam, they are matter. Gyan can be various things, but they are not directly shaped by the three modes. The senses, there is a person who acts in the senses. Okay, I may use my senses passionately or ignorantly or in goodness. But the senses themselves are insentient matter. Similarly, within the material world, the Gyaya is the matter material world. So now I may say that certain trees are in goodness, certain trees are in passion, certain trees are in ignorance, that's fine. But overall, the material world is insentient. So there is no direct influence of the modes on the material world, independent of observer. So therefore, what is happening here is, out of these six elements, so you cut this out. The red is cut out. Then Parijnata is cut out because Parijnata is the same as Karta. And then Karanam is cut out. So what remains is Jnana, Karma and Karta. And if you look at the next section of the Bhagavad Gita, okay, so now you look at this particular section. Sorry, yeah? I'll explain. So now, if you look at the subsequent analysis in the Bhagavad Gita, first he's talking Jnanam, Karma, Karta. These three factors he will analyze. So the six which were there, they were reduced to three. And the Krishna is saying, now these three I'll be describing. So first I'll describe Jnana. Now how are they related? Jnana is the first step in action. Without knowledge, I'll not be able to do anything. I have to have some knowledge by which I make sense of the world, and then I will decide, okay, when a tiger is coming towards me, I have to understand that tiger is an animal which will eat me. When I have that knowledge, then I will decide, okay, I have to find a sword to defend myself, I have to use a gun to shoot it, or I have to run away, whatever. So jnana is the beginning of action. Then after that, there is a karma, there is a kind of action that I'll do. Some person will run away. And now when they are running away, there are different kinds of kartas. Some people will run very fast, some people will run slowly, whatever. So, that is the different kinds of karta. Now, beyond that, Krishna will describe that there are other factors in action. There is buddhi. Buddhi refers to the understanding. So, jnana is more like, it's just a passive knowledge. Buddhi is applied knowledge. You remember, Prabhupada defines buddhi as to see things in perspective. We'll explore this difference more in detail when we compare jnana and buddhi later on when we come to the Bhagavad Gita, those sections. 23, 25 and 30, 32. Now, when I am doing a particular activity, I need to have the intelligence of how to do it. But intelligence alone is not enough. For example, if I see a temptation coming towards me, then I have the buddhi to understand, okay, I should flee this temptation. But along with the buddhi, I need dhruti, I need determination. Otherwise, I feel like this is enjoyable, why should I give it up? So, that is the dhruti. So, for doing any action, I have to have the right intelligence and then I have to have the right determination. And in the end, all the actions that we do are for the follow of sukha, happiness. So then, we look at the various kinds of happiness. So the whole purpose of this analysis is to show how every action that we do is permeated with the three modes. And by acting in goodness and by striving for the happiness and goodness ultimately, one can stay free of karmic entanglement. Okay? So, 20 to 22 talk about jnana, knowledge, which is the first step in action. 23 to 25 talks about karma, which is the kinds of action in goodness, passion, ignorance. Then 26 to 28 talk about karta, who is the doer, who can be also in the three modes. Then, after talking about this, Krishna will talk about, in one verse he will tell, now I'll talk about these three things. What are the further components of action? Okay, how I should use my intelligently I should act, so that's buddhi, it's required in action. Then to continue acting intelligently, one needs determination. So Krishna talks about determination also. And then at the end of action, what I want is the fruit of happiness. Then Krishna will talk about happiness in three modes. That is 36 to 39. So in this way, this second section of the jnana of a karma yogi, which explains how the karma yogi stays free from bondage, is divided. Does he have to make all of the six into goodness? Yes. And he has to also, and overall he understands that how by acting in goodness, one stays free from bondage. Yes. Correct.
Sadhana practice mentioned over there as such, majorly, for the karma, of course, you can say karma kandi, it was mentioned, but for karma yogi exactly, what he is supposed to do? He was supposed to develop certain qualities. For Ashtang yogi, so, for karma kandi, Krishna mentions, for Gyan yogi, now he will mention in 18th chapter, and Bhakti yogi he mentions a little bit briefly. But for karma yogi, exactly he has not mentioned the sadhana process.
So karma yogi, what is the sadhana process? Exactly, the focus is that you do your duties, but do it with a detachment. So 5.89, he talks of naiva kinchit karomiti yukto manitvait pashyan shrunvan spashyan jigran. So that is one thing. So here Krishna is talking about in the more analytical framework of how the person should act, or what is the internal consciousness and understanding with which a person should act.
Analyze.
This is more practical in terms of analysis. Yes, definitely, much more practical.
There it was more of quality. So it's like
there it is more of introspection and more of just the focus on detachment. Be detached.
Yeah. Equipoise and detached. That's what are the two main.
Correct. What was your question? Okay. God is Krishna telling over here how the Nishkam Karma Yogi can be attached through these qualities? Well, there are no explicit qualities directly, but qualities you can say it's talking about modes, and the modes have some qualities associated with them, no doubt. So what Krishna is telling over here is, by analyzing in terms of modes, one can understand how one can stay situated in a way that will not cause bondage. So this I'll just repeat. I was asking about how these six come down to three. So let's look at, I'll give an example to make this easier. Suppose a snake comes in this room. Okay. So jnanam gyanya parigyata trividha karma chodana. So I have to have some jnana. Oh, that snakes can be poisonous. If they bite, they will kill me. So that is the beginning of knowledge, beginning of action, jnana. And then there has to be the parigyata who is present. That is the person, if I am fast asleep, I will not see the snake only. So I have to be there, I have to be conscious. Parigyata, the knower has to be there. Then, jnaya is the object of knowledge. Now, jnana is that I know that snakes are poisonous, But then I have to see the snake over there. Then I'll, oh, snake is poison. Then I'll decide some action. So here, jnana just doesn't refer to generic object of knowledge, but it refers to the object of knowledge which is an impetus for action. So then, okay, I see the snake. So I know I have. So the jnana is the snake. The jnana is, oh, snakes are poisonous. Parijnata is, I don't know. Now what should I do? So this is the jnanendriya space. Then the karmendriya phase comes in. So karanam karma karteti trivida karma sangraha. So what happens is karanam. My senses are there. So I can respond in different ways. You know, if I am influenced by ignorance, I just scream. I just scream without doing anything. You know, that is just aggravating the situation. I'm attracting the snake to come towards myself. Possibly. If I'm just agitating myself too much. Or then, the most common reaction, say for example, say a fire happens in a theater. There's a stampede, everybody runs away. That is passion. So I might just try to run away from the closest possible way. If there's only one door, then I think, can I jump out of the window? What will happen to me? Which is bias? Jumping out of the window is, what should I do? I just, on an impulse, I may just react. So, now there is karanam karma karteti. So karanam is the, I may scream with my mouth, or I may run with my legs. The karanam. And karma can be, is related. I may try to just stay focused, stay at one place, or I may run away, or I may think of what is to be done. So my karma will vary, and I call karanam. And karteti, karteti is the soul. So now, karta is the same as the parijnata. Now, largely the karta is in tamoguna, the karta will react differently, and it's according to the different modes. So now, look at these six factors. Now, here you will see that the parijnata and the karta are the same. Okay? The seer and the doer are the same. Now, among the remaining things, the snake is what it is. Now, for the action that we are going to perform, the snake itself may be in mode of ignorance. But for the action that I am performing, the snake's mode is not important. It is my mode that is important. Now, the snake is in mode of ignorance or whatever. That is not going to determine whether I am going to get karmically bound or not. If I am going to become karmically bound, then it will depend on my consciousness and my actions. That's why jnana is not a factor over here. And the karanam itself is just a tool. The karanam, the senses are dead. So if I am screaming, that screaming, it may be in a mode of ignorance. I'm just so frightened, I'm screaming. But then, that it is not that the tongue is in the mode of ignorance, the person who is screaming is in the mode of ignorance. So when we want to analyze the action, at that time, the karanam's modes are also not important. So therefore, what remains, we rule out karanam, then jnana and parijnata are one. Jnanam, jnayam, parijnata, no. Then, jnanam, karma, cha, karta, cha. Trividha, karma, chodana. So therefore, what has happened is, jnana and parijnata, karanam are left out, and parijnata and karta are fused into one. That's how we have jnanam, karma, cha, karta, cha. That's what Krishna is analyzing in future. Okay? Any other questions? Yes. Parijnata and karta are same, then? No, why has Krishna mentioned separately? Because there he's analyzing in terms of knowledge acquisition and action performance. So in terms of knowledge acquisition, the parijnata is the perceiver of the knowledge. And in terms of action performance, the karta is the doer. So Krishna is analyzing them separately. And in the process of analyzing them separately, he will describe them separately.
Sometimes they can be different also.
In the same action, they will not be different. Unless say, I am possessed by a ghost. And you know, then the parijnata and karta are different. So that's an exceptional situation. Yes. So, how the senses can be taken out of the analysis? The senses are a part of the action. Now, here Krishna is talking about analyzing the action in terms of the modes. So, for example, Now, if say, through that window I can see some woman walking along the temple staircase. Now, if my eyes are attracted to that, so are my eyes in passion or am I in passion? I am in passion. So senses are basically the instruments for my action. Isn't it? So that means, if I want to analyze in terms of the modes, the senses themselves are not the direct impetus for action, are not the actors directly. Senses are instruments for action. So we don't say that, we say that the person is in a particular mode, not the senses are in a particular mode. So Krishna, because he wants to analyze in terms of the modes, that's why he focuses on the karta, not on the karanam over here. Clear? They are factors of action, no doubt. But when we want to analyze in terms of the modes, then we have to see what are the primary factors, primary elements that are influenced by the modes. Clear? Yes, in a sense, yes. So, if generally, if I am in passion, what does it mean? That Krishna talks about, say, Indriyani vana buddhirasya adhishthana muchyate. Lust is situated in the senses, mind, intelligence. So, in that sense, if I am angry, if I am in passion, that means that passion is situated in my subtle body. Isn't it? And through that, it comes out of the gross body and expresses itself through gross actions. Okay? Yes. How? How is Gnaya removed? Snake. So how is the Gnaya removed? See, the object of knowledge in and of itself is just the start by which the action happens. Like Chanakya Pandit used the example that, say, a woman may be seen by a young man as an object of sense enjoyment, by a child as a mother, by a sage as a display of the illusory energy, by a lion as a food item. So that means what? The Gnaya is not the primary factor that determines the mode in which the action will be performed. With the same Gnaya, perceptions can be quite different and actions can be quite different. So that's why Gnaya is definitely a factor in the action. But it's not necessary that when I see a woman, I have to be in passion only. There can be different emotions that come up. So when I want to analyze my actions, the Gnaya is not what is primarily important. It is my reactions that are important. You know, Harikesh Prabhu was serving Prabhupada at one time, and then he had to cook in the kitchen, and then he had to cook for Prabhupada also. In one temple, there was no separate kitchen for cooking for the spiritual master. So he had to cook in the kitchen, and there were many Matajis cooking. So one day he complained to Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, there are so many Matajis there, I get agitated. Prabhupada said, and if you get agitated, you go to the forest. So he was shocked. Prabhupada, what do you mean? Prabhupada said, if you are going to be part of preaching mission, you have to tolerate. You cannot blame them. You cannot tell them to go away. So of course, later on we can create some structures by which there can be separation. But the point is, if I am getting lusty, we cannot blame women for that. I cannot blame women because I am getting lusty. Now we can say that women have an obligation to dress properly. That is fine. But even if they are not dressing properly, that does not justify my lust. See, they have a responsibility which they have to do. Now, they should not provoke lust. But just because they dress improperly, that does not justify my lust. So the point is that the whole point should not be a blame game, whether man is to be blamed or woman is to be blamed. So traditionally it has been that women have been blamed. Now women are saying, you are blamed. You know, if you become lusty, that's your problem. That's not my problem. So there are sociologists who say that this is just to become a foolish game. You know, if a man, he goes out into a street where there are many robbers who are known to be there, and he has $1,000 notes protruding out of all his pockets. And then if somebody comes and robs him, he says, those thieves are illegal. They should be stopped. He said, yes, they should be stopped, no doubt. They should be punished, no doubt. But it is simply a matter of common sense that if you don't want to be thugged, hide your money. isn't it? So it's not a matter of legal rights or wrongs over here. You know, the point is, if somebody robs somebody else, that's wrong. But if I don't want to be robbed, it's a matter of common sense that I don't exhibit my money. Isn't it? The same way, in a woman, if a man abuses a woman, no matter how the woman is dressed, the man is responsible. But if the woman gets abused, then if she is parading her own body, her assets in a way that will provoke others, then it's not that she is to be blamed for that, but she's also playing a role in that. And why provoke? So it's not a matter of say rights or wrongs. It's certainly wrong to rob or to abuse a woman, but the provocation is something should be avoided. So Vedic culture does talk about, not just Vedic culture, generally all religious cultures talk about modest dresses for women. So that is true, but ultimately the responsibility for lust is on the man. If a man becomes lusty, the woman's dress doesn't justify the lust, or especially the lust is expressed through actions. The responsibility is with man. But women should also play the role of not provoking. Are we clear? So that's why the gnaya is not what primarily determines my action. So we'll stop here and we will continue in 15 minutes. We'll discuss these jnana, gnaya, parikyata, jnana, all these we'll discuss elaborately, and we'll try to complete at least till verse 40 today. Let us see how much we can complete. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. 15 minutes, so 5:10. Thank you.